Hi, and thanks for listening to Ordinary Mindsendo's podcast. Our listenership has grown quite a bit, and we wanted to give you a chance to be involved somehow. So Barry has offered to field some questions from listeners, kind of like a Zen version of Dear Abby. If you listen to the podcast, you have a rough idea of his areas of expertise and the topics he enjoys, but really any questions about your life, your practice, psychology, philosophy are all fair game. We'll bundle these answers together and turn them into short episodes for you to listen. Just email your questions to contact@ordinarymind.com. Also, please consider leaving a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to the podcast. Ratings and reviews help other people find the podcast. Thanks and enjoy the talk.
This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The Book of Serenity, Case 22. When Ganto came to Tokusan, he straddled the threshold and asked, "Is this ordinary or is it holy?" Tokusan immediately shouted. Ganto bowed. Tozan heard of this and said, "Anybody but Ganto would hardly get it." And Ganto said, "Old Tozan doesn't know good and bad. At that time, I was holding up with one hand and putting down with one hand." At the time of this story, Ganto is the younger of the monks here. Tokusan is his elder, and Ganto is coming to either test his master or show off what he knows or to challenge him and elicit an exchange. And so he comes in and straddles the threshold, it says. He comes and stands right at the door, neither inside or outside. And he asks, is this place ordinary or holy? And so the whole way this is framed is in terms of challenging oppositions of inside and outside, ordinary and holy. And as such, it conforms to kinds of a standard kind of problem that these old koans pose in terms of these dualisms that we're asked to overcome. The straddling of the threshold is said to be modeled on an action of Shakyamuni Buddha, who was challenged by someone who came up to him with a live bird in his hand, holding it like that in his fist, and asked the Buddha, "Is this bird alive or dead?" The idea being that if he said alive, he would crush it and kill it. If he said dead, he would let it go. And Buddha, in response, straddled the threshold of the doorway and said, "Am I coming or am I going?" So it's an attempt. Again, there's this kind of attempt to say, are you beyond things like life or death? how are you going to handle this one, right? So in Ganto comes and challenges the teacher, saying, is this place ordinary or holy? Teacher shouts. Ganto bows. Now there are a number of commentaries on this, and you can take the exchange apparently in a number of different ways. If you like, we can imagine that Ganto is really being challenging and a little bit rude when he bows to Tokusan. He sort of said, oh, a shout, yeah, oh, that's a great Glenn, you know, Zen cliche. I'll bow to that and call you holy as a result, right? But let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say that rather than Tokusan, rather than answering ordinary or holy, he gives a shout. He makes a response that in some sense is supposed to be neither ordinary or holy. It's just immediate. And Ganto recognizes this as going beyond the duality and says that is worth bowing to. We get a little bit of commentary in the case itself of Tozan saying anybody but Ganto would hardly get it. And Ganto himself responding saying Tozan doesn't know good from bad. I was doing both at once. I was holding up with one hand, putting down with another. The whole tradition here is also one in which praise and blame are mixed up. Not knowing right from wrong can be a praise. You're not caught up in either or. In the same way that Rinzai praises his Dharma successor by calling him a blind donkey, right? Somebody who can't see or think, you know, what could be more perfect, right? Now, the story has a certain amount of appeal to me simply because, you know, it's got that word ordinary in it, and we use that a lot. And it sets up this dichotomy between ordinary and holy. And holiness is not something that we particularly preoccupy ourselves with these days. In a sense, we've so valorize the ordinary that we forget all about the idea of the holy. And so we have to go back and sort of say, what does it ever mean to call something holy? And why do we even want to have such a category? And I would suggest that to bring it alive for us today, I would translate it instead as it matters. So the dichotomy is something like, is this ordinary or does it really matter? And so much of what Zen practice has been about, certainly what it was about for Joko, was treating ordinary things, ordinary parts of your life, ordinary actions and the way you do things as if they really mattered. You know, for Joko in particular, when we were out in San Diego, in the breaks, people would sit out in a patio like this where we had a table and chairs. And she always said that the way she judged a student was when they got up and went back in, did they put the chair back under the table, or did they just leave it any old way as if it didn't matter? Elizabeth, who had to live there, said that her particular thing was whether people, you know, they'd come into the kitchen, have a glass of water, and then they would, they'd just leave the glass in the sink, right? So she put up a little sign over the sink, said, if you leave your glass in the sink, who do you think is going to wash it? So there was a great emphasis on this sense of paying attention, treating all these little activities as if they really matter. You know, the one I'm getting known for is telling my son and everybody to make their bed in the morning, right? This is, you know, treat it like it matters, right? Dogen was, you know, the ultimate fanatic about all of this. He wanted to sacramentalize or ritualize all the activities of the monk's daily life, you know, from brushing his teeth to going to the bathroom to working in the kitchen, all the things that you're doing when you're not sitting on the cushion. He had a little rule for, a little ritual for. And it's not just that he's obsessive, it's that he wants to treat all these things as if they are holy, as if they really matter. And it's a challenge for us as lay people to bring that attitude to what we do all day. But you could say that that's really the essence of bringing Zen off the cushion, out of the Zendo, and into your life, is to treat people and things as if they matter. What an idea, right? Now, the other, you know, other turn of that is the way we can worry about whether we matter, whether our lives matter, whether our lives have meaning. And in the context of the old Zen stories, you know, the idea was more like, you know, I've been working on Mu for 20 years and I've never answered it. You know, have I just been wasting my time, right? That whole sense of practice as this means to an end, and either you got it or you didn't, right? And if you didn't get it, well, what have you been doing, right? And again, Dogen tried to create a whole perspective that's an alternative to that, where he said that Zazen isn't a means to an end, it's not enlightenment isn't something you get at the end of all this practice. He said sitting and enlightenment are the same, that when we sit, we express our Buddha nature, we enact enlightenment. So you don't have to worry about, did you get it right, right? By sitting, you're automatically getting it right. You're automatically being who and what you are. right? You're really fully expressing your potential in doing this and living this way. It's not something we're going to achieve after a lifetime of practice. Our life is going to enact that from the very first time we sit down. It's a very radical idea, and it has almost become too familiar so that we don't recognize how radical it is. But I think when we step outside of the realm of monasticism and think about our own lives, there are lots of ways in which we cast doubt on whether our lives matter, right? Did I get the promotion? Did I publish a book? Did I have children or grandchildren? Do I have friends, right? Does anybody around here know of me? Do I have, you know, am I famous or am I totally obscure and forgotten, right? There are all sorts of ways that we create these criteria, usually external criteria, of some accomplishment or some kind of recognition that would make my life matter, right? And if I haven't done that, if I haven't got that, it's like the old monk who hasn't solved Mu for 40 years, right? My whole life has been a waste, right? So Zen is really here to provide an alternative to that sense of your life is a waste unless X, right? Your life matters if you live it as if it matters. Your life matters if you live in such a way that you treat things and other people as if they matter. Right? Whether it's the chair on the patio, making your bed in the morning, doing the dishes, being courteous to a stranger, helping somebody in the Zendo who's new, you know, learn the ropes. These are the things that make you who you are. These are the things that make your life matter.